I apologize that I haven't been to the morning program for a few days. It's a little disrespectful that I haven't been able to listen to Bhagavatam class, but now I speak. But I have a good excuse, because I was there for the passing of Mother Lala Samayi. And of course we stayed up till Mangalarti time chanting while she passed away, and threw me off my off schedule. But I'd like to share my own experience of that with everybody, because I never knew Lala Samayi before she passed away. I never even seen her. But we went that night. I was there when she passed away. And it's very interesting how it happened, because we were celebrating my birthday. But it actually wasn't my birthday anyways. It was a week before my birthday. And that we just happened to be doing it on that night. We decided, because it was practical and it was some devotees were going to be leaving in a few days, so we wanted to do it on that day. And then we also decided that we'd do it. We'd start at 9 o'clock after the last artik. Now, generally, I don't like hang out at that time of the night, or, you know, with sake of having parties and stuff. But somehow, I became attached to the idea that we'd have it at that time, right? So then, we're all taking prasadam, and just when we finish prasadam, everybody's satisfied. We're all sitting there, you know, happy with the feast that we just ate. And then, Mother Jadurani calls up Shyamalika Mataji, and which happens to be the first person which she calls up. She had no idea that we were having a party there, you know. And all the college students were there. There was about 15 devotees. She calls up and she said, "Oh, she's passing away just now." And so everybody, okay, well, let's go. So we all went over there, 15 devotees, and we went and we sat down and we did kirtan for her passing. So it was just amazing how we were all there at one time. Why on that particular night, and why at that time? It was quite late. It was by 11:30 by that time. So it just seemed that, you know, Paramatma was arranging all these things to happen for such an advanced devotee. And when we went there, we were chanting for a long time, and it seems the chanting was a little different. Everybody was chanting a little bit differently than the usual way we may chant. Everybody was meditating on the holy name. Everybody was heard the holy name itself. The holy name is non-different from Krishna. It's a person. So everybody was chanting the holy name in this personal mood, and you really felt a powerful atmosphere. And everybody was praying to Krishna, "Please take this, you know, this devotee back to Godhead." And we were all chanting in that mood. I'll speak a little bit about this later, about chanting. But after some time, we were there for about 45 minutes to an hour before she actually passed away, and devotees decided to sit down because we'd just eaten a big feast and it was a little bit late. So everybody sat down and was chanting like that, but I decided I'd stand up the whole time because I didn't want to, yeah. So I actually saw her last breaths. I saw her pass away, and it was extremely, I never seen actually somebody leave their body, so it was a new experience, definitely a new experience, but I learned a lot from it. And just to see her, I saw within 45 minutes her breathing became longer, it was stretched out more and more each time. And just when she was passing, her shoulders came up and she was breathing a little bit heavy. And then I saw her eyes just very, very peacefully, her eyelids just very peacefully closed. And her mouth open, and that was, she went back to God. Well, according to the Shastras, she went back to Godhead. Devotees were there chanting. She was holding her japa beads. She had tulsi in her mouth. She had Ganga water sprinkled on her body. Harinam Chadra. Devotees, Mother Jadurani was chanting the Maha Mantra in her ear. Everybody was praying for her. I mean, we can't say we know she went back to Godhead. We can't say that we know, because how do we know anything like that? But according to the Shastras, this is what, you know, Krishna promises, this is what happened. That was my experience of that. Just wanted to share. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. There was a little complication with the verses today, so I prepared for verse 36, but actually I should have been preparing for 35. But if I had spoken on 35 today, the notes which I took weren't related at all to the verse and purport, so I decided I'd just speak on 36, and tomorrow the devotee would speak on 35. Dishtyagatosi bhajram te gramyan kamana bhipsase udvahishyami tamsteham svabandhubhir arindama. Translation: O killer of the enemy, you have somehow or other come here. This is certainly great fortune for me. I wish all auspicious things for you. You have a great desire to satisfy your senses, and all of my friends and I shall try our best in all respects to fulfill your desires. Please repeat. O killer of the enemy, you have somehow or other come here. This is certainly great fortune for me. I wish all auspicious things for you. Sorry. You have a great desire to satisfy your senses. And all my friends and I shall try our best in all respects to fulfill your desires. Purport. The living entity comes down into this material world for sense gratification, and his intelligence, represented by the woman, gives him the proper direction by which he can satisfy his senses to their best capacity. In actuality, however, intelligence comes from the Supersoul, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he gives full facility to the living entity who has come down into this material world. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, 2nd chapter, 41st verse, Vyavisayatmika buddhir ekeha kurunandana, buhushaka hyanatascha buddhayo vyavisayinam. Those who are on the spiritual path are resolute in purpose, and their aim is one. O beloved child of the Kurus, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. When a devotee is advancing towards spiritualization, his only aim is the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He does not care for any other material or spiritual activity. King Paranjan represents the ordinary living entity, and the woman represents the ordinary living entity's intelligence. Combined, the living entity enjoys his material senses, and the intelligence supplies all paraphernalia for his enjoyment. As soon as he enters the human form, the living entity is entrapped by a family tradition, nationality, customs, etc. These are all supplied by the Maya of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, the living entity under the bodily conception of life utilizes his intelligence to his best capacity in order to satisfy his senses. The subject I'll speak about today, and the subject of this verse, is a friendship. Prabhupada mentions here in the beginning of the purport of the Supersoul. But also here in the last line of the verse, Swabandhubhir, means with all my friends. So we'll talk about who's actually our real friend. There's two words here in the first line of the verse which are very interesting. Bhajante means all auspiciousness to you. And in the second chapter of the second canto of the Bhagavatam, there's another place where this word bhajante are used, and Prabhupada says, he translates it, good luck to you. This is usually a friendly type of remark, right? You'll say, we don't really say all auspiciousness to you, but we say kind of, you know, good luck or be safe. In America, you say break a leg. It's typical of friendly dealings to say things like this. So in the second canto, the other place where I was mentioning this is said, that's the pastime of Lord Brahma when he, in meditation, he sees Lord Vishnu. Right? Lord Brahma was created from the lotus flower, and he had no idea what was what. And he went down the lotus stem, but he couldn't find the end of it. And he looked all around, he couldn't see anything. But he heard the words, tapa. So he performed penance. And in his penance, in his meditation, Lord Vishnu revealed himself in the whole spiritual world. And Lord Brahma saw everything. He saw Lord Vishnu seated on the throne, on a royal throne, surrounded by all of his shaktis. Lakshmi Devi was sitting next on his side. And he saw the Lord's bodily features. He saw his yellow silken garments, which resembled the color of lightning. He saw his sharp shake earrings, his priceless jewels that adorn his body. He saw how his four arms are powerful like serpents, and his strong legs. and three distinct lines across his chest, and three lines across his neck. You saw his eyes are like lotus petals, and his hair is so fine, and it's very curly and black color, and it comes down, you know, brushes the side of his face, and also it goes down to his shoulders. So he saw all these details. And then Lord Vishnu saw Brahma standing there. And so he approaches Brahma. He sees that he's qualified to be the creator of the material world, to create the living entities. And does anybody know what he does then? Shakes his hand. Takes his hand, shakes it, right? So just like a friend, right? And he says to Lord Brahma, Bajamte, good luck. And, you know, from one cosmic creator to another, this means something, good luck, right? So, if you're wondering where the handshake originated from, it originated from God himself, right? I remember one other pastime, my father was reading Chaitanya Bhagavat to me a few years ago. And we were reading in Chaitanya Bhagavat about the Prem Sankirtan that the devotees would have with Mahaprabhu and the Panchatattva. And this Prem Sankirtan wasn't ordinary Sankirtan, it wasn't ordinary Kirtan, but the devotees were so ecstatic. Everybody's body became spiritualized, and they all attained mystic powers. So some devotees became so strong that they ripped trees out of the ground, and they started dancing with the trees, right? And some devotees developed the ability to fly, so they floated on top of the trees, and they started dancing on top of the trees. So Lord Nityananda was watching all this, and he was so happy, he puts his two thumbs up in the air like that, right? So that also originates from God, right? We're not the creator of anything in the world, even thumbs up. Anyways, my point was that when Vishnu approached Brahma, he shook his hand, just like an intimate friend, right? But actually, Krishna is all of our most intimate friend for each and every one of us. Here in the purport, Prabhupada mentions that the intelligence is given to the living entity to enjoy his senses. The intelligence helps the living entity enjoy in this world. But actually, that intelligence comes from Krishna. That intelligence is Krishna himself. He states that himself in the Bhagavad Gita, the 15th chapter. Sarvasya chaham hiri sannivishto matasmitir gyanam apohanam cha. Sarvasya chaham hiri sannivishto. I'm situated in the hearts of all living entities. Matasmitir gyanam apohanam cha. And from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. The Krishna is the intelligence of all living beings. And Krishna is everything to us. We can't exist without Krishna. In the 7th chapter, Krishna states, Bijam mam sarvabhutanam vidiparta sanatana. You should know that all that exists, I am that original source of anything that exists in this world. Krishna is the original source. And then of the verse previous to that, he says, Punyoganda prativyamsha. Tejas chasmi vibhavasal. Jivanam sarvabhuteshu. Jivanam sarvabhuteshu. I am the life of all that lives. Right? Krishna is our life. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings, Krishna mata, Krishna pita, Krishna dhanapran. Krishna is your mother. Krishna is your father. Krishna is the wealth of your life. Right? Without Krishna, we don't have anything. Right? The intimacy which we share with the Lord, that can't be experienced anywhere in the material world. Everybody is simply hankering after this love. This is the love which we hanker for. We want it so badly. We want to love without reserve, without the worry of being hurt by somebody, and we want to love without cessation. But in this temporary world, we don't know how to love. Firstly, we don't know how to love properly. Material desire is there. Selfishness is there. And if we do want to love, everybody else is looking to exploit another. And even if we do, even if we think we've found that perfect love, it will be mercilessly ripped away from us by the time factor. So we can't find that love without Krishna. All suffering that we'll experience in this world, everything that we've experienced, all suffering that we're experiencing now, and every suffering that we'll experience in the future, that's all due to the unfulfillment of our desire to love Krishna. So I think Lokanath Swami, or another Maharaj, I forget who, he says that we have a Krishna-shaped hole in our heart, right? And nothing that you put into that hole is going to fit, right? You can try and squeeze it in, but it's just going to pop out. So the only thing that we can put there is Krishna, right? it's very lamentable that we've become envious of Krishna. We're throwing away our natural opportunity for perfect love, for perfect friendship. And it's also said that Krishna's desire to love us, to have a loving relationship with us, it's so much greater than our desire will be to love him. It's so much greater than our desire will ever be to love him. Just see the mercy of Krishna. Who can understand that? Even though we've been traveling from one body to another, lifetime after lifetime, we've committed so many offenses towards God. We're constantly insulting him, constantly trying to deride him. But Krishna's still there, and he's ready to accept us at any moment. The moment we take one step towards Krishna, he's ready to accept us. So merciful. There are many, many verses in the Bhagavad Gita which Krishna expresses this himself. We have in the Chatur Shloki, the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks about bringing the devotees to him. Let's see if I can get there. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam pratipurvakam dadami buddhi yogantam yenamam upayantite. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. And the next verse, Tesham uvanukam partam aham agyana jamtama nashyam yatma bhavasto gyanadipena basvata. To show them special mercy, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. And there's a verse in the Bhagavatam, the ninth canto, in the pastime of Durvas Muni offending Ambarish Maharaj. And so Ambarish Maharaj is a whole pastime, but he had drank water before he was able to give Durvas Muni his meal because he had to break his fast, although drinking water isn't eating. So it's an offense to eat before your guest eats. So then Durvas Muni became angry, and it was because of his pride that he became angry. Actually, there was no offense at all. He took out a bunch of hair and he threw it on the ground, and this gigantic fire demon arose in the air. He was ready, and he ordered him to kill Ambarish Maharaj, a great devotee, right? But Lord Vishnu was watching all this, and he sent his Sudarshan Chakra. Sudarshan Chakra, he came and he burnt the demon to ashes. Now, how do you burn a fire demon to ashes? But that's the power of the Sudarshan Chakra, right? So then he starts chasing Durvas Muni all over the universe. And Durvas Muni goes everywhere. He goes to Lord Shiva and he prays to Lord Shiva for his protection. Lord Shiva says, "What can I do? This is the Sudarshan of Lord Vishnu. He is my master." And he goes to Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma says the same. He even goes to Lord Vishnu. He can travel to the spiritual world. I don't know what type of potency he had, but somehow he could go to the spiritual world, and he went to Lord Narayan, and he said, "Narayan, please protect me from your Sudarshan." He said, "Sorry, I can't help you." Imagine how he must have been feeling. He went to everywhere. He even went to Lord Vishnu, the ultimate protector, and he said, "I can't help you." So now what? He said, "You have to go to Ambarish Maharaj, and you have to beg forgiveness from him. Because you have committed offense to him, then you've actually offended me. Because I exist in my devotee's heart. I am there in my devotee's heart. And by offending my devotee, you're offending me." He says, "Sadhavo ridayam mayam, sadhanam ridayam tam, madanyate na jananti, naham tebyo managapi." Sadhavo ridayam mayam, the sadhus, the devotees, my devotees are always in my heart. Sadhanam ridayam tam. And I am always in the sadhu's heart. Madanyate na jananti, naham tebyo managapi. I can't think of anything else except for my devotees. And then my devotees, they can't think of anything else except for me. It says managapi. Managapi means even the tiniest bit, even the teensy-weensy bit. Krishna can't think of anything else except for his devotees. How much love Krishna has for his devotees. So then, of course, Durvas Muni went to Ambarish Maharaj and received forgiveness, and that all went there. So then we have in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the 12th chapter describes devotional service. And Krishna says there, "Yetu sarvani karmani mai sanyasya matpara ananya naiva yogena mam dhyayanta upasate teshamaham samudarta mrityusam sarasagarat bhavami na chirat parta maya veshita chetasam." These two verses are illustrated by this painting here. The devotee's reaching his arms out to Lord Vishnu. He's crying, "Save me, save me." Yetu sarvani karmani. Those who give up all their activities, mayasanyasya matpara, those who give up all their activities for my sake. Ananyanaiva yogena, and who practices devotional service without any deviation. Mamdantu apasate, and those who worship me, constantly meditating on me. Teshamaham sumuddharta. For those people, I become their deliverer. Right? Sumuddharta means the deliverer. Teshamaham sumuddharta mrityu samsara sagarat. From the ocean of birth and death, right? See, the ocean of birth and death. Mrityu samsara sagarat. Sagarat means the ocean of birth and death. Bhavami na chirat parta. Not after a very long time. Not after a very long time. That's why, therefore, Prabhupada translates it as, I am the swift deliverer. Swift. So I was looking at this swift deliverer, and I said, how did Prabhupada translate it in this way? So I was looking at the word for word as Bhavami na chirat parta. Bhavami, I become na chirat parta. And I saw chirat, after a long time. That's what chirat means, after a long time. And I was thinking, after a long time? But it says swift here. How did Prabhupada saying this to make us feel better? But I missed the word na before it. Na chirat, not after a very long time. So that's how it is. It's very, very quickly Krishna saves us, right? And that this painting perfectly illustrates it. The devotee he raises his arms in the air and he says, Krishna, save me, oh my Lord. Right, that's how we're supposed to chant the Maha Mantra. In this mood, we're supposed to chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. We're chanting with feeling, oh Krishna, save me. Right? Mahaprabhu taught us, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us to raise our hands in the air while chanting in kirtan. Why? Is it just some exercise? No, it's because, oh Krishna, save me. So maybe we can all put our hands in the air. Everybody can put your hands in the air. And we'll chant on the count of three, the Maha Mantra, very loud, just crying out for Krishna to save us. 1, 2, 3. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. It's powerful, isn't it? That's what we should chant our rounds in that mood. It should be that intensity all the time. Chant our rounds, chant in the kirtan. And that person, I was mentioning this in the beginning when Lalisa Mai was passing away. We're all chanting in that mood. It was an amazing atmosphere. We're all chanting, praying Radha Krishna. Usually we hear, Yes. Generally, Srila Prabhupada explained that the Maha Mantra, Hare, means the energy of the Lord, the internal potency, right? And Krishna, he's the all-attractive personality of Godhead. He's the all-attractive God. And Rama is another name for Krishna, the reservoir of pleasure. All pleasure exists in God. That's Rama. And so when you're chanting the Maha Mantra, you're praying, my dear Lord, my dear energy of the Lord, engage me in your service. Please engage me in this service. Losing track of what I want to say. Right, so we hear it's usually explained like that, and we should cry out while we're chanting the Maha Mantra, just as a young child would cry for her mother. I remember a devotee was giving class in Alachua. It was a Sunday feast, and he was saying the same exact point. And just the second he said that, one little girl came into the temple room, and she was crying, Mommy, Mommy! And everybody's like, wow, did somebody stage that or something? No. That's how we should chant. But I wanted to make a different point on chanting the holy name. I was in Vrindavan in 2007 with my Guru Maharaj, Srila Indradumna Swami Maharaj. We were doing parikrama around Vrindavan. We were going to different holy places. And I remember specifically, they would speak about the relevance of the Dham or the how to advance in spiritual life. So I remember on two occasions, I remember very vividly, he was speaking about this, how to chant the Maha Mantra. Right? But he quoted on these two occasions the same story. And that's why it stuck with me all this time, because he saw it as a very important thing, so I took it the same way. He said, Srila Prabhupada was once asked by an Indian gentleman, what is the meaning of the Maha Mantra? How do we chant the Maha Mantra? Right. So like I said, I mean, Srila Prabhupada would generally explain, you know, Hare means the internal potency. But this time he said to the man, when you chant Hare Krishna, you should be praying, oh my friend, oh my friend, oh my friend. Right? Shishradha Gopinath ki. So he in another time he said the same story, that this man asked, how do we chant the Maha Mantra? And he said, when you chant the Maha Mantra, say, oh my friend, oh my friend, oh my friend. Like that. That's how much intimacy is there in the holy name. So we have to become purified at heart, and then we can understand that Krishna is our greatest friend. He's our best friend. He's our eternal friend. Right? And a devotee who realizes this, he'll simply fall in love with Krishna. Right? He'll experience the greatest happiness simply talking about Krishna. Right? Simply thinking about Krishna, worshipping Krishna. He'll be always blissful in that way. This is the position of the Vaikunthavasis, the residents of the spiritual world. Right? They're all in love with God. They're completely in love with Krishna, with Lord Vishnu, Narayan, all of his different expansions. They're all in love with Krishna. And the residents of Goloka Vrindavan, from the gopis to the cowherd boys, to the cows, to the goats, to the tigers, to the trees, and even the grass, everybody is in full love of Krishna. Nobody can think of anything else except for Krishna. The cowherd boys, when they're playing hide and seek, Krishna will hide behind a tree. And other cowherd boys will go crazy. Where's Krishna? Where's Krishna? And they'll search for him, and they'll get anxious when they find him, and say, oh, okay, we found Krishna. But they can't stand the moment without Krishna. That's what it's like for them. Right? And this is why we perform so much austerity in devotional service. This is why we do so much endeavor. This is why we work so hard. Because we want a drop of this love. We want only a fragment of a drop. Nectar Devotion explains, if we have only a fragment of this drop, we'll never think about material desires again. We'll never desire anything which is not related to Krishna. Right? And what if we experience a whole ocean of love? I mean, it's beyond me. I can't understand how there can be an ocean. Because even a small drop is so exciting. It simply brings you to a different level. You can't think normally. And Srila Prabhupada writes in one bhajan, his bhajan when he was coming over on the Jaladuta, says, Se din kabhi habe more. When, oh when, will that day be mine? I could share one more story, but what do you think? Okay. I have the book, The Life Story of Ramanujacharya, here. This is an ecstatic book. Gopal Hari Prabhu gave this to us at the completion of our Vaishnav Acharya's course. Ecstatic. You see, Ramanujacharya was such... You see all the qualities of a pure devotee in him through the pastimes. It's the same as, you know, you think of Mahaprabhu when you hear his pastimes. Right? So it's a very ecstatic book. But in the beginning, there's a description of Yamunacharya, who is the predecessor Acharya to Ramanuja. And in that story... there's one verse which I wanted to quote. This is the verse after the verse which I was describing that this painting illustrates. This is Mayeva mana adatsa mayibudhim niveshaya nivishishyasi mayeva ato ordvam nasamshaya. Another extremely intimate verse. It said, simply engage your mind in thinking of me and engage all your intelligence in me. Thus you will live in me always without a doubt. Krishna says, you will live with me always without a doubt. Ato ordvam nasamshaya. You should have no doubt about this. Right? So this verse has a very prominent role in Vaishnava history. This was the verse that converted Yamunacharya into a pure Vaishnav. Now Yamunacharya, when he was born, he was born in a Vaishnava family, and he was studying Sanskrit grammar and all these, you know, all the Brahminical things. And he was a devotee of Lord Vishnu. And his grandfather, Natamuni, he was the he was the leader of the Vaishnavas at that time, the South Indian Vaishnavas, a great devotee. But when Natamuni's son, the father of Yamunacharya, he passed away very shortly after Yamuna's birth. And Natamuni was so distressed by the fact that his son had passed away so young that he decided to take sannyas and become fully devoted to Lord Vishnu, have nothing to do with the material world. So then Yamuna was without parents, without his father or his grandfather. He grew up with his mother and his elderly grandmother, and they were in poverty their whole life. But Yamunacharya, he was a great pundit, even at the young age. At 5 years old, he went to the school of Bhashyacharya. And Bhashyacharya taught him everything, and he became so learned, he became the favorite student of Bhashyacharya. But in that kingdom, there was the king, he was a Pandya king. Pandya is just the name of the king, I guess. And he had one favorite pundit in his court. And this pundit, he was the most intelligent in the whole kingdom. He defeated all scholars in debate. Right? And the king made a law. Very strange. I don't know how these things went on back then. But he made a law that any pundit that was defeated by the... Kolahala was the name of this pundit. Any other pundit that was defeated by Kolahala had to pay tax every year to Kolahala. And if they didn't pay tax, they would be put to death. Very, very strange. Anyways, So Bhashyacharya had previously, 2 years before, had lost in debate to Kolahala. And so for 2 years he hadn't been able to pay because it was just a simple Brahmana. How could he pay tax? Right. So then Kolahala, his disciples, came to the house of Bhashyacharya, to the school of Bhashyacharya, and they said, and Yamunacharya was the only one there to receive them, and he said, "Where is your teacher? He hasn't paid his tax for 2 years. Is he insane? Is he so insane that he's not going to pay Kolahala? He'll suffer greatly for this if he doesn't pay." And Yamunacharya, he retorted. He was very kind-hearted. He was a soft Vaishnava by nature, but he couldn't stand to hear such criticism of his guru. And therefore, when he says this, he was only 12 years old. He was speaking to great pundits. He said, "How foolish you are, and how foolish your teacher is as well. For who but the greatest fool would train his disciple to possess such monumental pride, instead of removing such qualities from his heart? Why should my noble teacher waste his time debating with such a man? Go and tell your master that the lowest disciple of the great Bhashyacharya challenges him to a debate." He was referring to himself. "If he dares to face me, let him send his reply at once." Right? So Kolahala's disciples were like flabbergasted. How this 12-year-old boy wants to challenge us or challenge our teacher? And they didn't know what to say, so they just left in anger and they told Kolahala about this. And everybody in the court started laughing. Oh, a 12-year-old boy wants to challenge? So the king sent a royal messenger back to Yamunacharya to say, Are you crazy or are you serious? So Yamunacharya, he says to him, says, the messenger says to Yamuna, "If you want to debate, then you should immediately come with me now, because we're all ready for this debate." He says, Yamunacharya says, "I will certainly obey the command of His Majesty the King, but if I am to be accepted as a proper opponent of the great Kolahala, then surely a conveyance should be sent to bring me to the palace." So he was traveling in style, right? He wouldn't just go like that. So a royal entourage came for him, 100 soldiers and a golden palanquin. And this 12-year-old boy is sitting on top. And when they came into the palace, the king was discussing with his wife. He saw this boy. He said, "Alabandar." Alabandar means the conqueror. He says, "This is the boy who has come to conquer me." And his wife says, "Yes, this is the boy who has come to conquer you." And he says, "Do you really believe that he's going to be able to do anything?" He said, "He's a special boy. He's not normal." He said, "Your claim is so strong. You should make a wager." And she said, "Okay, I wager that if he loses, I will become the maidservant of your maidservant." And so the king says, "Well, that's certainly a great wager. If this boy wins, I'll give him half my kingdom, right? So then they started the debate, right? The Kolahala sat down and Yamunacharya sat down, and I'll read the contest. I'll read it to you because it's very interesting. When the contestants were seated, Kolahala began the debate by putting simple questions on Sanskrit grammar to Yamunacharya. When, however, he found the boy could answer them with ease, he began to pose really difficult grammatical problems. But still, Yamunacharya replied to them all without difficulty. He then spoke to the great pundit with a playful smile on his lips. Because I am just a boy, you are insulting me by asking me these simple questions. Remember that Ashtavakra was no older than myself when he defeated Bundi at the court of King Janak? If you judge a person's learning by his size, then surely it follows that the water buffalo will be a greater scholar than yourself. Although Kolahala winced at these words, he controlled his anger and replied smilingly, "Well answered. Now it is your turn to put questions to me." "Very well," Yamunacharya responded. "I will put three propositions before you, and if you can refute them, I shall accept defeat." Kolahala agreed and prepared to refute Yamunacharya's statements. "My first proposition is this," Yamunacharya spoke out clearly and boldly, "that your mother is not a barren woman. Refute this if you can." A barren woman means she didn't have any children. Obviously, his mother had children because he was her child. Hearing this, Kolahala remained silent. "Had my mother been barren, my birth would have not been possible," he thought. "How can I refute this statement?" Seeing Kolahala as silent as a dumb man, all the courtiers were astonished. Although the great pundit tried to conceal his anxiety, he could not prevent a flush from crossing his cheeks. Yamunacharya spoke again. "Sir, if in spite of your all-conquering intelligence, you are unable to refute my first proposition, then please hear my second. It is this, that the Pandya king is supremely righteous. Refute this if you can." On hearing this, Kolahala was deeply disturbed, sensing his imminent defeat. With the king seated there right in front of him, how could he deny the boy's statement? Again he remained silent, the color draining from his face, as he was scarcely able to control his anger. Yamunacharya spoke again. "Here is my third proposition, that the queen of the Pandya king is as chaste and faithful to her husband as was Savitri. Refute this if you can." Seeing how he had once again been trapped by the intelligent boy, Kolahala could no longer restrain his anger. "You rascal," he screamed. How can any loyal subject say that his king is unrighteous or his queen unfaithful to her husband? It is true that I have not replied to your statements, but that does not mean I am defeated. First, you must refute your own propositions, and if you cannot, you should be put to death, for the implications of your words are treason against your king and queen." When Kolahala shouted out these words, all his disciples and supporters cheered. But all those who favored Yamunacharya cried, "No, Kolahala is defeated. He is simply letting forth his anger, because he could not refute the statements of Yamunacharya as he promised to do." Thus an argument broke out in the palace, but in the midst of the contention, Yamunacharya quieted them all by saying, "Please stop this argument, for it is unnecessary. I shall refute all my propositions one by one. Please hear me." At this, everyone fell silent and turned their attention to Yamunacharya, wondering how he could possibly do this and yet not offend the king and queen. "My first statement..." Oh, am I reading too fast? Sorry. "My first statement," he continued, "was that our great pundit's mother was not a barren woman. However, it is stated in the Manu Samhita that a woman who has only one child is to be considered barren. As your mother gave birth to only one child, even though he is a man of such merit as yourself, according to the Shastra, she must be considered barren. Secondly, I stated that the king of the Pandyas is a most righteous man. However, the Manu Samhita states that a king enjoys the benefit of one-sixth of the religious activities of his subjects, but also has to bear the burden of one-sixth of their sinful deeds. Because in the present age of Kali, men are more prone towards sinfulness than piety, it must follow that our king, although flawless in his own character, is bearing a heavy burden of unrighteousness. And now to my third proposition, which stated that our queen is as chaste and faithful as was Savitri. But again, if we consult the laws of Manu, it is said that the king is the representative of Agni, Vayu, Surya, Chandra, Yama, Kuvera, Varun, and Indra. Therefore, the queen is married not to just one man, but to these eight demigods as well. How can it be said that she is chaste? On hearing these wonderful answers, all the people were filled with amazement, and the queen joyfully cried out, "Alabandar, Alabandar, he has conquered, he has conquered." The king immediately came forward and embraced Yamunacharya. And then the king, of course, he gave him half his kingdom, right? Just as he had said it. And said, "Now you may do with Kolahala as you like," right? So what did he do? He forgave him completely. And then he was only 12 years old, but he took up He became the king of half of the kingdom, and he began ruling like that. And very soon, all the kings in the neighboring states saw, oh, a 12-year-old boy. Well, this is, let's go get it. But he was so powerful, he brought an army before they were even prepared, and they were forced to surrender. Right? So then he increased his kingdom, and for many years he was going on like this. So Natha Muni, his grandfather, he was a great sannyasi Vaishnav, and he knew that he was enjoying kingly pleasures, and he was forgetting about the service of Lord Vishnu. He forgot everything about his devotional service from his youth. But he was nearing old age, and he was going to pass away very soon. So he told his foremost disciple, one sannyasi, Rama Mishra. He told Rama Mishra, please, my last request to you is to bring Yamuna Acharya back to devotional service. Make him into a Vaishnav. He'll become a great Vaishnav. He'll lead all the Vaishnavs after my departure. So Rama Mishra took this as his life's mission. Right? So then, how did he convert Yamunacharya? So he went to the kingdom of Yamunacharya, and he gave him, every day he decided, it was very difficult to see the king, and he thought it wouldn't be, he couldn't just approach him directly and speak to him about this. So he came up with a scheme. Every day he brought a certain type of spinach, a certain type of leafy vegetable to the royal kitchen. It was a very, very healthy, very delicious vegetable. And you bring that to the kitchen, and he said, please prepare this for the king. This is my gift to the king. And so when the king first tasted this, wow, this preparation is so delicious. He didn't ask anything about it, but he very much enjoyed this preparation. So for 2 months, Rama Mishra was bringing this vegetable to the king, to the king's kitchen. And the king was enjoying it every day. This was his favorite preparation. He would eat this every day. And then one day, after 2 months, Rama Mishra decided not to bring any more. For one day, he didn't bring. So the king became very disturbed. He said, where is my spinach preparation? I want my spinach preparation. This is my favorite. He says, well, the brahmana who brings it every day, he didn't come today for some reason. He said, a brahmana is bringing this? Why is a brahmana bringing this? I don't know. He just brings it out of love. He said, when this brahmana comes again tomorrow, bring him to me. I want to speak to him. So Rama Mishra came back the next day. And he brought the spinach, and the royal cook, he brought him to the king, just as he had asked. He said, who are you? What is your purpose? Why are you bringing the spinach? And he says, my name is Rama Mishra, and his humility, he said, I am the lowly disciple of your grandfather, Natha Muni. He has sent me here to give you a great treasure that he has left over from his lifetime. And he wants me to bring this to you. He said, oh yes, this is great, because I'm just going now to conquer another state, and we need wealth, we need weapons, we need artillery. So please show me this. We'll bring an army right now to get this wealth. He said, no, but you're the only one who can come. Only you can come with me for this. He said, okay, let's go. So the king was a little nervous, Yamunacharya was a little nervous, but he went with the brahmana to get this wealth, which he was speaking of. And so while they were walking, he was bringing him south down to Sri Rangam. And every day they would be walking, and he would be sitting down chanting the Bhagavad Gita. Right? He would be chanting the Bhagavad Gita straight through all the verses. And Yamunacharya remembered all these verses from his childhood, because he learned all this. He was in a Brahmana family. Right? And so then every day he was remembering more and more and more, and his heart was melting, and he was remembering all the service which he had performed to Lord Vishnu, all the blissfulness of it. And so finally, he came to this, Rama Mishra was chanting the Bhagavad Gita, and he came to this verse in the 12th chapter, Mayeva mana adatsva, mayibhutim niveshe, niveshishyasi mayeva, atta ordvam nasamshaya. Engage your mind in me, and engage all your intelligence in me. Thus you will live in me always, without a doubt. And when Rama Mishra spoke this verse, he broke down into tears, and he was in ecstasy, the love of God. And Yamunacharya also, he broke down and he fell at the feet of Rama Mishra, and he said, please, I'm sick of material activities. I'm sick of my kingly duties. I don't want this anymore. I want to become a devotee of Vishnu. I don't want anymore to be forgetful of Krishna. Please just sit here and teach me Bhagavad Gita. So they sat there for a few weeks, and he was just teaching him Bhagavad Gita. He was teaching him the Shastra. And after this, Yamunacharya became completely renounced. He became a Vaishnava sannyasi, went to Sri Rangam, and he dedicated all of his time to worshipping the Lord. And he gave his kingdom away to the rest of the Pandya kings, and like that. That's the importance of this verse. I thought it was very special. Okay, that took about 15 minutes. Is there any questions or comments? Anything at all? Something? Okay. Thank you all for listening. Srimad Bhagavatam ki.